Hi, this is Melissa Bartel, and this is the post for August 30th for the Dog Days of Podcasting, and it's actually my last entry in Dog Days of Podcasting. It's number 18. It was supposed to be 30 or 31 days, but I didn't start it until midway through, and I skipped a couple of days here and there, but that's okay because it takes 21 days to form a habit. And even though I haven't really been doing this for 21 days, I will say that I've become addicted to this whole podcasting thing. So earlier this week, I actually submitted my feed to iTunes, and starting in September, actually on Tuesday, you will get to hear new stuff on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I'm actually learning how to be a little bit better editor and producer. Although I'm still going to do everything from my iPad, I bought a couple of apps that I'm playing with, and I look forward to sharing new content and stuff. Tonight, however, because it's my last night and because I've had a day that included getting peed on by one of my dogs, it wasn't on purpose. He's a puppy and he's hyper and it was still gross. And I took a shower and I feel like I need two more before I feel clean. But that's a whole other thing. But because it's been a day, I didn't write anything new. I'm still working on new stuff. I just haven't finished anything to the point where I'm ready to share it with people who don't know me intimately. So for my 18th and final Dog Days of Podcasting entry, I am reading one of my oldest pieces of work. It's, actually it's not my oldest, but it's one of my oldest published pieces of work. It was published in an e-zine called Pink 90s in spring of 2008. It's actually part one in a four-part short story. It's called Chai. So it is a cafe vignette, but it's a little bit longer than my typical vignette. The thing about working in a cafe is that you have the opportunity to meet all sorts of people, fall in love with them in the space of 5 minutes, live out entire love affairs during a single conversation while you take an order, brew a drink, make a perfect crown of foamed milk. The regulars become friends of a sort, the kind of people to whom you might casually mention that you're singing with the band at the neighborhood pub on Friday night, if they'd like to come, but not the kind you'd go out and do things with. But the others, the folks who come in for a drink and leave with your heart, you never see again. And even though there's a pang, you let it happen over and over. It's the men that really do it for me. The homeless guy with the world's troubles in his eyes and the voice that sounds like old paper and bad jazz. The art student with his bright-hued blue hair and matching sketchbook who pays in paint-stained bills. The endless assortment of musicians and crafters who wander over from the park across the street where there is some kind of fair or celebration. With their vintage clothes and battered knapsacks. The engineering students who are attractive behind their shiny calculators, geeky glasses, and expensive laptop screens all have their charms. In any given week, I'll meet the eyes of 5 or 6 different guys across the counter, touch their fingers as they take their money, and give back a tiny piece of my heart with their change. But then I met her. It was during an afternoon lull of the kind we always have around 3, when the office-y types had gone back to their cubicles and the students weren't yet finished with classes. I was alone behind the bar, enjoying an ancient Enigma CD playing over the sound system and cleaning the copper of the espresso machine in time with the beat, when the bell on the green front door jingled and she came in. If I'd had a camera, I'd have snapped her picture. Instead, I have her image engraved on my soul. Her long golden brown hair was left loose, sun-dried and crackling with static electricity, the ends swishing against the bare skin of her tan shoulders, and bits of it getting caught in the spaghetti straps of her waistband. Yellow and orange tank top. Her skirt swirled in a blur of red and orange, the bells on the drawstring waistband jingling softly as she moved. Her feet were wrapped in brown leather, chunky sandals with sturdy rubber soles. A person could do serious walking in those shoes, and from the dust on them, it was obvious that she didn't wear them just for show. The mala beads on her right wrist exuded the faintest scent of patchouli, or maybe it was her skin that smelled of it. She ordered chai, the spice sweetened tea that I'd come to prefer over espresso myself. We blend our own every morning and keep it in a big glass cider jug with cinnamon sticks and cardamom heads floating in it. "Do you want regular milk in that, or would you prefer soy?" I asked, both as a service and as a test. Her bright clothing marked her as someone like me, someone who belonged among the street gypsies, who liked people but were content to be alone among crowds if the mood fit. "Soy, if you have it," she said. Her voice had the telltale rasp of a smoker, or rather, the beginning of one. Most people never would have noticed, but I'm a singer, and I hear what other people don't. I nodded. "Chai tastes smoother that way, don't you think?" She smiled. "Truly." I moved behind the tall copper espresso machine to steam the tea and froth the soy milk to blend with it. "Is this for here or to go?" I asked as the pitch changed in the frothing pitcher. Other people watch the thermometers replaced in each of the metal containers, but I can tell by the pitch if the milk is done. "I heard you sing at the beat the other night," she informs me instead of answering the question. I'm not sure how exactly to respond to that, so I just say, "Oh?" "You were good. I can see the story on your head when you were singing. I came to find out what it was." I wanted to blush and shuffle my feet and stammer like a 13-year-old girl on her first date, but I was holding a pitcher of hot soy milk. I opened my mouth to offer some one-syllable comment, but she spoke again. "If I have my drink here, will you tell me?" I poured the chai and hot milk into one of our ceramic mugs and set it on the counter, with the handle facing out. $3, I told her. "I have to watch the door." She bent her head to look inside the leather satchel she was carrying, one of those teardrop duffel-type bags on a leather thong that hippies carry in movies, even though they cost a couple hundred dollars in real life. I was jarred from a moment of bag lust by her scent, still patchouli, but now there were cloves and ash as well, probably from the cigarette she smoked. I remembered smoking cloves with my best girlfriends on the beach the summer before, and smiled at the memory and the woman across the counter. She pressed 4 rumpled dollar bills into my hand, and my skin tingled. "Keep the change," she said. She settled herself at the table directly across from the door, then glanced back at me. "I'm not leaving," she said, "until I hear your story." It was a hot day, unseasonably warm for October, even in California, and I knew there wouldn't be many more customers until the sun went down. "All right," I said. I steamed another pitcher of tea and soy milk for myself, smoothed my hair, wiped my hands on the blue apron I was wearing, and took the chair across from hers. The conversation was awkward at first. She asked me if I liked working in the cafe, and I answered that I did, and then we were quiet. I looked into my cup as if the phone would give me a clue what to say, and when it didn't, I looked up again and met her eyes. They were the color of bittersweet chocolate, and they compelled me to open up. "The thing about working here," I said, "is that I get to see into people's lives the way hairstylists do, but without the ammonia and aerosol." "Do you fall in love with your customers?" she asked. "Only all the time," I answered with a grin. She returned the gesture, but waited silently while I sorted out what to say next. "There's this man who comes in every morning," I began. "He has a 5-year-old daughter, and she skips beside him, and he holds her hand." "Go on," she prompted. "He's divorced, about 40, way too old for me, but you want him." She grinned when she said it. "I can't help it," I admitted. "His hands are strong and warm, but rough, as if he does woodwork or something. He always wears chambray shirts on Fridays, and the blue matches his eyes exactly. He drinks double cappuccinos, very dry, dash of cinnamon, and has a plain croissant. His daughter has a slice of banana bread and a cup of hot chocolate, even in summer." "What's his name?" I blinked at her, feeling suddenly stupid. "I have no idea," I confessed. I didn't know any of their names, but I knew their usual drinks and whether they preferred paperback novels, magazines, or the morning paper, and what colors made them happiest. "But you like his hands," she prompted. I blushed, but responded to the prompting. "I do. Pay a lot of attention to hands. Hands and eyes." "What's special about hands?" "They tell stories," I said. Our eyes met across the table and the connection was made. We both laughed. She arched her brows at me and I expanded my statement. "You can mask your feelings by schooling your face, keeping your expression neutral, but your hands give you away. Calluses, manicures, they all betray your truth. Lawyers never have particularly strong hands, for example, but construction workers do." "And writers' hands are stained with ink?" She said it with humor in her eyes and voice. "Actually, no," I replied. "Most of them use computers these days. I suppose they might have flattened fingertips, but it makes them indistinguishable from secretaries for the most part." "Good point," she agreed. She picked up her mug, swirling the liquid inside it before taking a sip, then set it down and spread both of her hands on the table, palms down. "And my hands?" she asked. I blushed faintly, but turned my attention to her hands. They were feminine, with neat oval nails, buffed, not polished, but also strong and tan from the sun. I reached out and rested my hands on top of hers, meeting her eyes. Then I pulled back a little and turned her hands over on the table to study her palms. "Are you going to read my fortune?" she asked, only half-teasing. "You will meet a woman who smells of coffee and cloves," I intoned in a fake gypsy accent. But then I rested my hands atop hers again, palm to palm, with my fingers curving over her wrists, settling over the pulse points. "You're a creative spirit," I said softly. "An artist inside, if not in fact." I looked up and found that she was staring at me very intently. In that moment, I knew I wanted to kiss her, and that she wanted the same, but as we were both stretching our bodies toward the door, it opened, and one of the professors from the university came in for her half-calf cappuccino to go, no surprise that she was from the business school, and the mood was broken. After serving my customer, I returned to the table, but this time we spoke of inconsequential things. Music we both liked, chocolate recipes that ought to be illegal, favorite elementary school teachers. I never gave her a linear version of my story, but I think she got the overall picture of who I was. Barista, singer, wannabe street gypsy, who kept letting her sensible side hold her back. We talked until Raoul and Charlie, the evening crew, arrived to relieve me, and then the awkwardness was back. "I should go," I began, standing up. "My shift is over." "It's no problem," she told me, standing up as well. "Good chai," she said. "Good story. I'll be at the Beat when you sing there next week." I leaned forward to pick up our mugs, but her hand stilled mine. "What?" I looked up, and our eyes met again, and I suddenly wondered if she tasted like cloves as well as smelling like them. Our kiss was intense, but too brief, though her thumb caressed the back of my hand and her soft hair whispered promises against my cheek. The jingling of the front door broke the moment and the mood, and she stepped away from me with a wry smile on her face. Raoul handled this new customer while Charlie put new votives in the candle holders on every table. When he got to the one where I was still standing, facing the door dumbly, he tapped me on the shoulder. "Girl, I thought you drove stick," he said. I rolled my eyes at him. "You are still jealous because I danced with Raoul and not you at the beach party last month," I said. "Maybe," he agreed cheerfully. "So, the hot chick, what's her name?" I picked up the mugs that were still on the table and turned hers to see if the faint trace of bronze lipstick on the rim. "I have no idea," I said as I walked toward the kitchen, smiling. I made a note to ask her the next time I saw her. In the meantime, it was enough that I knew her drink. So that's chai, and as I'm reading it, I realize it's rougher than I meant it to be, but I think I'm going to polish it, because I think there's a lot in it that really informs some of the other stuff I've been reading over this last month that are all mine, too. And finally have a plan in place for yet another super secret project. So thank you, Tabs, for making me do this by setting an example, not by twisting my arm. And thank you, everyone involved in Dog Days of Podcasting, for being helpful and encouraging and never saying, "Oh, God, Melissa, this totally sucked." Because I know that sometimes it was really uneven and sometimes I ramble too much. And thank you, anyone who listens, for taking the time. Have a great weekend. Good night.